Capital One has a plan to change the world of credit one small good thing at a time. Like finding out if you'll be accepted before you apply, with no risk to your credit score. That's one good thing. Always giving you the APR we offer, no excuses. That's another good thing. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're not saving the world. We simply promise to do credit like everyone's watching. Capital One. That's one good thing.
34.9% APR representative variable. T's and C's apply.
Welcome back. Coming up on this week's show, CBS announces more details about their Serie A coverage, our thoughts on ESPN's first week of La Liga coverage, which league gets off to a big start with TV ratings, and your feedback in the listener mailbag segment. I'm Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, joined alongside my co-host Kartik Krishnayar. So what is this podcast? It's unfiltered. It's our honest opinions about soccer coverage from a hardcore fan's perspective. But both of us have also been longtime soccer journalists covering the game in this country. And we are nothing short of some honest critiques, whether a positive or negative. So, Kartik, it's been an interesting week from this past week. There's been a ton of soccer. I know that I've watched everything from some of the women's games, Women's International Champions Cup. I watched some of that this week. I watched MLS. I watched, of course, the Premier League, the Bundesliga, Ligue 1, Championship, and probably some other leagues too. But what would you say in terms of most of your coverage thus far? For me, it's been the Bundesliga. I've actually pretty watched more Bundesliga this week than anything. But what about you? What have you been watching?
Yeah, I guess I've not watched a whole lot. I mean, I've watched more championship than anything. I've watched five or six matches from the championship. ESPN Plus is showing a lot of championship matches this year so far. In fact, even showed us that late Swansea-Sheffield United. I'm sorry about that match for you, although you guys got a draw. That late Swansea-Sheffield United kickoff on Saturday, which I wasn't expecting. They'd already shown two matches that day. And Bundesliga. Those have really been the two big focuses. I've been basically distracted by COVID in Florida. I haven't really paid attention to much else, news-wise or soccer-wise, mm-hmm. other than that. So, but yeah, the championship in the Bundesliga, which puts me on ESPN Plus and a little bit of La Liga permanently. And this is the challenge, I think. For me, in watching NBC at this point and the Premier League, because I'm comfortable now on ESPN Plus with the multicast, and I can watch Bundesliga and Championship and La Liga all at the same time on the same platform. And the Premier League's not on there, Serie A's not on there either, and we'll have to see this week what my viewing habits are like with CBS's Serie A debut, but this is always a danger, and I sense I'm not alone in this, where you just kind of gravitate to what's on ESPN Plus.
Yeah, me too. And this is something that was not orchestrated. This is, you go off and do watch your games that you enjoy. I do the same thing too. We don't really talk much midweek regarding what we have watched. But yeah, for me too, I'm watching a lot more stuff on Multiview because there's so many games on. Like, so this past weekend, this past Saturday, I would have had probably, using my Apple TV and ESPN Plus and then the multi-view feature on there, as well as Fubo. Fubo TV has a multi, I think they call theirs multi-view, and then maybe ESPN calls theirs multicast. Watching, I think, two games. So I had two Premier League matches on at the same time. I think I had four Bundesliga matches on. And then I may have had another monitor watching the Championship or Ligue 1 or something else. I don't know. So much soccer from around the world. The only challenge, the only thing I find that I'm kind of missing out sometimes on that is that I might have one of the monitors or TV screens muted. So I miss the commentary, but I'm still watching the pictures. But watching a ton of soccer and everything from that Man United win against Leeds United. I mean, the 5-1, pretty straightforward victory there with some incredible firepower, to the Chelsea win over Palace on Peacock, but I did watch a few games from Peacock. The Sunday's Tottenham Hotspur against Man City game, Kartik, I thought it was an interesting contrast going from that game, which was high intensity, high level football, nonstop, really excitement levels pretty high, and the fan base. I mean, the fan base and the atmosphere in that stadium, and you even go back to what Brentford against Arsenal on that Friday, I mean, all the way through the entire weekend. The number of people in the stadiums, unmasked, but incredible atmospheres. And then going from that, just a great ending to that Spurs-Man City game, flipping the channel and then going to ABC and ESPN Plus for the coverage of the game between Barcelona and Real Sociedad. And what a difference. I mean, obviously with social distancing in Spain, not as many fans in the stadium. With the Camp Nou being a much larger stadium, you know, it was 60,000 to 80,000 people, but only having about 30,000 fans in there, it looked practically empty, and the atmosphere wasn't there. The game was great for Barcelona, for the neutral, so-so, but the coverage from ESPN and ABC was great, but just what a contrast between the two. And ultimately, it was a little bit of a letdown, I thought, Kartik. Did you catch any of ESPN's coverage?
Of La Liga? Yeah, I mean, I think it was what we expected, right? There was no real surprise to me. I didn't catch the Barcelona match. However, I did catch the Real Madrid match on Saturday. And I thought it was pretty straightforward. It was there had been so much build up to it. I think that they built the expectations so high, based on the releases and of the studio team and the reporters and the match commentators, that it was as expected. I wouldn't say it was bad.
No, it was the same for me too.
Under my expectations, yeah.
It was
at my level of expectation.
Me too.
I wasn't wild by it.
Yeah. I was. I would say no surprises on my part watching it. I thought it was well done. Nothing incredible where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely amazing. Nothing bad. So it was exactly what I thought they would do, and which is very professional. It was great seeing Macca and Ian Dark in the commentary booth, and they had video of that. Kind of, you had the live shot, they had the camera, so you could see them pre-match talking about the game, and Macca talking about some of his experiences playing for Real Madrid at Camp Nou, and just the atmosphere, and you mean playing with Figo, and all the experiences, and then Ian Dark talking about some of the games he had commentated from La Liga in the past, probably for one of the British broadcasters. But overall, for the weekend, it wasn't the most memorable weekend for La Liga, based on, you mean, results or what happened on the pitch. But it's a good start, and it's just the first game week of an 8-year deal. This is something we'll have to get used to. The other part of this, Kartik, I think is interesting too, is that last weekend both NBC and ESPN had quite a few games on television. So we had, you mean, of course, Man United and Leeds, Man City and Spurs on the Premier League side and NBC side. And then we had the big game, Barcelona and Real Sociedad on ABC, as well as ESPN Plus on La Liga side. Now, this coming weekend, it's a different tune. You've got, on the Premier League side, you've got Liverpool against Burnley, Peacock. You've got Southampton against Manchester United, Peacock. And then on the La Liga side, all of the games on ESPN+. And it's going to be a while before we see another game on ABC or ESPN or ESPN2. Having said all of that, though, Kartik, this weekend actually is... Bayer Leverkusen against Borussia Mönchengladbach, 12:30 Eastern Time, Saturday, ABC and ESPN Plus also. My game of the week to watch. Do you think we can expect anything different from this one? I mean, are we going to get La Liga level of coverage for the Bundesliga on this big game?
Probably not, but Bundesliga's production is much better. I wanted to point out that the German Super Cup, I don't know if you saw it, but...
Yeah, game of the week. Oh, actually, yeah, no, what's...
Spectacular.
Right.
the pre-match. So they take the camera from pitch level through the tunnel, walk you through the media room, walk you through the setup into Borussia Dortmund's dressing room with the camera, with a drone, however they did it, and through the concourses of the lower level of the stadium where the players come out, et cetera, and then back onto the pitch.
Nice.
And it's that level of production we don't see, that kind of like that kind of neat behind the scenes thing. Maybe you get that on club channels 3 days later after a match, but that was really cool. So are we going to get La Liga level treatment from ESPN? No, but will we potentially get actually better production level? Maybe, just with the way the Bundesliga produces matches,
right?
And ESPN with Derek Ray and Casey Keller will call the match for ABC on ABC.
All right, Kartik, I have to ask you: do you like the new score bug that the Bundesliga is using?
So I did this on Twitter simultaneously because I was, like we said, we were doing the multicast. And so the what's really interesting is the championship, the EFL shrunk their score bug this season. It's smaller, and I guess you probably have noticed that by now, Chris, watching Swansea. Score bug, slightly smaller than it was, a little less busy at the top. Then the Bundesliga has gone the other direction. They've taken the team names off, the city names off, and they now have three-letter initials with this huge, gaudy, colored thing with a guy kicking. In fact, some people were confused this weekend and wanted to know what club logo the guy kicking. That's the Bundesliga logo. It's going to take some getting used to. It was really gaudy. I don't like the name, the three-letter abbreviations being used. I hate that. That doesn't tell for most fans. What is SGE? Okay, do you know that's Eintracht? The Dortmund Eintracht game was which we know is Dortmund, or actually people may not know that's Dortmund, SGE. A lot of people may not know what that is, although the colors are appropriate. I think I'll get used to it, but I really liked the old Bundesliga score bug. That having been said, like, the production level of the Bundesliga games is really, really good. The score bug is something we probably will get used to. I actually like the new championship, the slimmed down score bug, without all the busy EFL and like those kind of designs on it this season. I think they've done a nice job.
Yeah, so I like the Bundesliga score bug, and a few different reasons why. One is just oftentimes somebody like myself could be walking through our living room, or walking through a bar, and you look up and see the screen, and you glance up, and usually that's the first thing you look at. And it's very visible. I mean, it's a lot larger, like you said. It stands out. You can't miss it. I like that. I can imagine them thinking about it in terms of the design and the size of the score bug, thinking, okay, if we're in a crowded pub or bar or restaurant and the game's on television, that's a great way to actually identify the score, but also to give the Bundesliga kind of a different look and feel, because it is very different than any other league out there. I mean, most other leagues are pretty standard. I mean, they use different fonts and graphics, things like that. The other part of it too, I think it's very trendy as far as just hashtags and being able to quickly figure out what the hashtag is. Yes, you may not know what BVB means, but after a while, if you're into German soccer, you'll know, okay, that's Dortmund. And a little bit later, then you'll figure out, okay, what does that actually stand for? SGE or Eintracht Frankfurt, and what does that stand for? And why is it not, FRA or EIN for Eintracht Frankfurt? So I like it. It's definitely not for everyone, and I'm sure there's a lot of listeners right now probably thinking, Chris, you're an idiot. I get that all the time anyway, but I like it, and I think it's kind of an adventurous move by the Bundesliga. And you're right, the production value, Kartik, is incredible. I said to you before, too, about the Super Cup, and I was shouting Game of the Week. Actually, that was not the Game of the Week. I thought the Game of the Week was actually the Dortmund-Frankfurt game, the 5-2. Haaland, absolutely on fire, incredible performance. I really love that game.
Too.
Yeah.
He had one goal disallowed in that match. It was the Super Cup where Holland and Moukoko both had a goal disallowed. So, yeah. No, that match was phenomenal to the point where I didn't even turn on. I know this is sacrilege for some of our listeners. I didn't even turn on Liverpool Norwich. I don't know how the coverage was. I never watched a minute of that match. I was watching the Dortmund match, and then Real Madrid was playing right after ESPN Plus also. So just it kept going with that. And then Swansea was playing Sheffield United, ESPN Plus also, just kept going with that. Mm-hmm. So this is – maybe it's me, Chris. I'm sure there are a lot of people listening right now saying, oh, you're idiots if you're not watching Peacock and NBC. Unless there's not a Premier League game on, we're not turning ESPN Plus on. But once you're in the routine of watching ESPN Plus, it's – at least for me, it was difficult to turn back to the Premier League this weekend. Which doesn't mean that I didn't watch the Premier League. I watched the Premier League on Friday instead of the Bundesliga, actually, and I watched the Premier League on Sunday. But on Saturday, when most of the matches were going on, I didn't even turn it on.
I would say that if we went back every single year that we've been doing this podcast and talk about the opening weekend of soccer season, I mean, we've been doing this podcast in various different incarnations since 2006, which is hard to believe, 15 years. But if we went back even like the last 3 years of this incarnation of the podcast, where we talk about kind of the media side and the soccer TV coverage side, I would say that every single time right about now, our viewing habits change slightly. And I would say that so far this season, I've watched less of NBC's coverage of the Premier League, the pre-match, halftime, and post-match, and I've been jumping around a lot more. So I might have more games on split screens, or if it goes to halftime, I'm switching a channel because now I've got ESPN Plus, I've got La Liga games, I've got Championship games, I've got Bundesliga games. You may be in sports. I've watched quite a bit of Ligue 1 the first couple of weeks of the season, and I'm jumping around a lot more than I would have done, say, a year ago. Definitely 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I would have been locked in, loaded, watching NBC's coverage from 7:30 in the morning straight through till about probably 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But yeah, my habits have changed absolutely.
And the thing that I found interesting this weekend is a lot of people were diving into my DMs on Twitter, telling me how bad the NBC coverage was, and how. And I know it's a different audience than the people who leave comments on the World Soccer Talk website who love NBC, but that seems to have reached kind of a critical mass of at least people I'm friendly with too. That I didn't watch enough of the coverage to critique, other than to say I didn't see anything extraordinary or new. I did watch the pregame on Friday, and that was 2 hours long. I did watch that entire thing, and it was, I was looking for more, honestly. I was hoping NBC turned the corner on some of these things, and they haven't. It's just kind of the same stuff.
Yeah, I heard the opposite. I heard a lot of feedback, whether it's through comments or through tweets or messages or emails coming in saying, hey, I'm so glad the Premier League's back, and I'm really loving NBC's coverage. So, and again, too, it's one of those things. We all have different styles and different tastes, and each of us come at it from different viewpoints, and we like different individuals differently, right? As far as kind of what we like. I've just been watching less actually kind of shoulder programming, and just more game time, and just flipping from game to game to game to game. Probably part of that too is in the nature of me working, being a soccer journalist, and covering all of this for World Soccer Talk, and being on social media and doing all these things. But I think even if I wasn't working and doing World Soccer Talk, I would still be doing the same type of thing for the most part. I'd be jumping around a lot more. But which I guess if I'm watching it alone, like I am, it's easier to do that. If I'm watching it with my family or my kids or my friends, they probably think, Chris, calm down. You're got ADD. You're jumping all over the place. Just sit down and watch this game, relax, have a beer, and let's talk about this game. Speaking of games, Kartik, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Truthfully, I was going to say, though, I think one really positive thing I have to say about NBC this weekend is, and they're going to do it again this coming weekend, is the match on USA. So we know SN is going away at some point, but the fact that USA, which is a station with greater reach than NBCSN, maybe not in the minds of soccer fans, but they're coming off showing effectively both the men's and women's side of the Olympic soccer tournament almost exclusively on that channel. I like NBC's use of USA the first few weeks of the Premier League season. So from a purely, you know, taking shoulder programming and whether we like commentators or not off of it, from a purely programming perspective, I think that's something that hasn't been talked about enough, and I think is a very good look for the Premier League and might bode well for NBC in this window now in the next 2 months where we assume they're negotiating to extend their deal or for the next 3 years or 6 years. Now, Chris,
hang on, Kartik, but let me just chime in there on that one. I would agree with you about having it on USA is great news for viewers and increasing the viewership, because it's in many homes, more homes than NBCSN. The jeopardy with that though too is that NBC the first couple of weeks of the season have been flip-flopping. So originally on the USA Network this past Saturday, opening weekend of the season, it was supposed to be, I think, Everton against Southampton, and then they changed it at the last minute and they put on, I think, Leicester Wolves, and then put the Everton Southampton onto NBCSN. Week two, which is this coming weekend, they did the same thing again too. It was supposed to be Man City was supposed to be on Man City was supposed to be on NBCSN, and I think it was Aston Villa Newcastle was supposed to be on USA, and then they just flipped it again. So that's obviously they're tinkering and probably trying to see how many people are watching the games on USA and just trying to elevate those numbers, or seeing that it's doing really well and putting the big games on there. I would just like to see some consistency there rather than just kind of flipping the schedule and changing it around and confusing people sometimes, because they're expecting one game and ends up being something else. For us, I mean on worldsoccertalk.com we've got all the schedules and we update those even as soon as we find out that information. But for the typical soccer fans, sometimes it can be a little bit confusing when they expect one thing and they get another thing.
So my concern is if NBC somehow does not retain the Premier League rights, these USA games, I could see very easily just going away at that point. So that's an overriding concern. Not really an overriding concern, I shouldn't say that. That's a concern. But the overriding takeaway, though, is this is NBC showing to the Premier League, hey, we're going to show you where we have in that 3 p.m. Local time, 10 a.m. Eastern time window, we have the ability to get greater reach on a network with many more subscribers that are in many more homes for your league. So I think that it may be all about the renegotiation, the USA games.
So what about
also putting the bigger game on USA, right? Leicester last week, Man City this week, flipping them with SN, I think might be about the renegotiation. That's at least my hunch.
It's possible. It's quite possible. So what about your game to watch this weekend? What would you recommend?
Oh, yeah. So I'm going the Monday game, West Ham-Leicester in the Premier League. I think those are two teams that were almost crashed the top four party last season. Were very entertaining to watch. The match between these two teams at the London Stadium 5 years. I'm 5 years past in some respects, Chris. That was just instinctive to say that. The match last season at the London Stadium between these two teams, which was toward the end of the year, was phenomenal back and forth match. And Leicester has some important new pieces in Samare and Vestergaard now, who came over from Southampton. West Ham, despite not having Jesse Lingard, didn't miss a beat, looked really good against Newcastle. I watched that game on Sunday. Felt like Suchek and Bowen, that midfield, Declan Rice is back fit, that they're really good. So looking forward to that match. I agree with you from a purely broadcast perspective, Leverkusen Gladbach is the match to watch this weekend. But from an entertainment football perspective, I'm going West Ham-Leicester, which is Monday, with the Monday kickoff on NBCSN.
Right. And last weekend, Newcastle against West Ham, great game, really good game. I thought Newcastle really went for it, showed some positive signs. And West Ham has just been a joy to watch last season and this season thus far. And, of course, playing Leicester, kind of a high-flying team, that one definitely will be a great game. And that's the thing, though, Kartik, too. I have to wonder, the crowd factor is a difference, is a differentiator.
Yeah.
So going into watching games this weekend, I'm sure a lot of listeners too will do the same thing. We'll probably switch on a game. And La Liga so far, I mean, in terms of, again, social distancing, health protocols, etc., a lot of the stadiums are very quiet, very empty, and it feels like you're watching preseason friendlies. It'll take time before those numbers increase in the stadiums versus the Premier League, where the stadiums are packed and noisy. The Bundesliga, those fans are noisy anyway, so the atmosphere are good in those stadiums. I just worry about La Liga losing some of the excitement and oomph that they could have gotten with some bigger crowds. Now, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news, and I'll have you kick it off with the latest.
Yeah, as we were just talking about NBC's opening weekend of the 21-22 Premier League season, the networks of NBC, which includes USA, averaged 630,000 viewers across TV and streaming offerings. This makes it the most watched opening weekend for the league since 2015, when opening weekend matches averaged 694,000 viewers. The NBC network game of the weekend, Liverpool versus Norwich, averaged 912,000 viewers, while Man City versus Spurs, which was on NBCSN, averaged 818,000 viewers, which shows not much of a gap between cable and broadcast. Interestingly enough, less than 100,000 viewers there. As a point-to-point comparison with La Liga, Barcelona playing its first match without Messi opened their La Liga campaign against Real Sociedad on ABC, which was right after that Man City Spurs match on NBCSN, and they averaged 465,000 viewers. So almost they only had about 55 or 60% of the viewers on network that the Premier League had on cable. So
yep.
La Liga has a long way to go in this country. That's a great point-to-point comparison, and it's a unfortunate one for La Liga, but it lets them know how much work they have to do, ESPN and relevant sports, to catch up to the Premier League here.
However, I would say, though, Kartik, those numbers do not include ESPN+. Plus. And that's the big factor, right? Because, you mean, you and I are watching ESPN Plus. You mean, I might be watching two or three games on ESPN Plus at the same exact time. You mean, not everyone does that, right? But there's a lot of people watching these games. That Barcelona-Real Sociedad game was also on ESPN Plus. So right. That's a factor. And that's the thing that's frustrating, is we don't get those numbers. So nobody knows what those numbers are. On top of that, it doesn't include the ESPN Deportes numbers. So you can imagine, too, I mean, tons of people tuning in for that, to watch that game. So the 465,000 that watch Barcelona Real Sociedad on ABC might have been much, much larger, might have been, you know, 600,000, 700,000. Only ESPN knows, and you mean, it's up to them to decide whether to release that information. But still, it's a positive start, and like you said, too, you mean it's a good start. Long way to go, but may the best man win. And speaking of best man winning, I think Matteo Bonetti and Andres Cordero have won in terms of being able to be appointed and be hired by CBS Sports. So they are the two new lead people for coverage of Serie A. Matteo Bonetti is going to be the lead analyst for Serie A on Paramount Plus and CBS Sports, and Andres Cordero is going to be the lead play-by-play commentator. From CBS Sports, they do expect to make more announcements in September. The studio is going to be based in New York City, so it's going to be a U.S. crew. For the first couple of weeks of the season, they will have studio coverage out of Stamford, Connecticut, out of the CBS Sports HQ studio. So it's not, when you see Serie A's coverage, which kicks off this weekend, that's not going to be the expectation of what it's going to look like for the entire season. Basically, in a few weeks from now, I think we'll see the full gamut of what it's going to look like. But as we mentioned, I think on a podcast maybe a month ago or 2 months ago, as expected, according to our rumors and sources, Matteo Bonetti gets the job. And Dre Cordero, we understand, was in talks with ESPN, and ultimately CBS Sports got him. So I think Kartik, the dynamic duo are back again on CBS
that
Sports.
Was that was the lead team on VN for Serie A for a couple of seasons. Dre Cordero and Matteo Bonetti have a really good chemistry. Should mention, it was interesting to hear Mark Donaldson, who had been paired with Matteo Bonetti the last three seasons, doing Serie A on ESPN, call the Bundesliga match with Casey Keller. That was the Frankfurt match, right? The Frankfurt-Dortmund match was Mark Donaldson and Casey Keller.
Yeah, and Derek Ray doing La Liga this weekend. He's doing the Levante against Real Madrid game. It's Derek Ray and Stuart Robson, and also Mark Donaldson, and is doing a game this weekend too. So it's good in many ways. I think in terms of having those commentators, I guess for some of the purists, Kartik, of the Bundesliga, there's probably less Phil Bonney and probably less Kevin Hatchard and others. So a lot of the voices we've been used to hearing week in, week out, covering the Bundesliga, we now have a lot of the ESPN commentators and analysts in their place instead. All right, listener mailbag. Let's move on to Ted Hill. Ted says, I wanted to share some thoughts about, after hearing your discussion last week about fans that wear PSG or Dortmund kits but don't actually watch many matches or follow the team closely. I think what we're seeing is what has happened previously in the NBA, first with Michael Jordan and more recently with several superstars. More and more of these fans prefer to follow and root for players more than they do teams, and they will even change their team allegiance when their favorite player leaves. We have especially seen this with LeBron James. Additionally, there is more of a fashion culture now with wearing football kits, especially as you pointed out, the PSG is currently the only Jordan brand football kit. In the NBA, that certainly started with Michael Jordan, where everyone had to have his jersey, even if you weren't a Bulls fan. Nowadays, you will see fans that have jerseys of many players around the NBA, even if they're rivals. I think those two types of fans are also more about big event fans and do not wish to follow week in, week out. They may get up for a big league match or once the Champions League knockout rounds come and for the big international tournaments, but they will not increase the weekly ratings for the Ligue 1 or other domestic leagues. I agree spot on with that one, Kartik. I mean, really, really well said there by Ted.
Yeah, absolutely correct.
Next up is Tim Keane. All right, Tim, here we go. So, Kartik, wasn't that a great weekend for the Premier League? Unfortunately, NBCSN was the same old, whereby a person visiting from another planet would think only a few teams play, not 20. And who was the new Neil Ashton, the insider? So inside, I had never heard of him.
Because The Athletic, unfortunately, is not in real circulation. I mean, The Athletic has had all these interesting offers in the UK to try and get people for a pound or £2 a week to subscribe. But here it remains kind of a cost prohibitive thing. So I'm not sure he's the right guy in terms of just scope that people would understand.
I think the feedback I've heard thus far, though, of those people who have watched David Ornstein, it has been positive. And I personally, I know he did the Friday game, Brentford-Arsenal pre-match. I think I had that on mute because I was watching probably the Bundesliga or something else at the same time.
Bundesliga and La Liga both had games at the same time. And as I said, that was the one time I watched the Premier League instead of those two. Now, had I turned ESPN Plus on, I may not have come back to NBC. So it's a good thing I didn't, actually.
Yeah, and like I said, too, again, I'm watching less pre-match coverage and more game time coverage, so I didn't get a chance to listen to what David had said. And it was a good weekend for the Premier League. I mean, from start to finish, really entertaining. And as always, there's a lot of talking points, and not all of them are at the top six, but the top six definitely, with Lukaku back. I mean, with Spurs getting a massive win, Man City and the hunt for Harry Kane. Man United, and just in terms of the firepower that they have, Arsenal just again being a demoralizing defeat. And that's just the kind of the top six there. And then Liverpool, of course, stay in the course, but do they have enough there to keep it going and make a challenge? And you go throughout the league, and there are so many talking points. And that's the difference, I think, between the Premier League and La Liga, and the competition, really. Because you look at Major League Soccer, are there that many talking points going on? With La Liga, same thing, too. Yes, there's big matches happening, but are there any major talking points? And for the most part, not so much. I mean, that's what really makes the Premier League one of the most popular leagues in the world. It's because, you know, oftentimes it's the transfers and the players that make you want to watch it. Paul says, I have enjoyed reading your articles on worldsoccertalk.com and some of those dealing with Peacock TV coverage of the Premier League. I wondered if you had noticed that they have performed yet another bait and switch regarding the replays of games. Last season, after removing them initially, they were showing all replays after 9 p.m. Eastern on game day. This season, any games shown on NBCSN are not available on Peacock until 24 hours later. As someone who lives on the U.S. West Coast, sometimes the games are far too early for me to watch live, so it was useful to be able to watch at least the replays later in the day. The first weekend, there were four games on Peacock, all on Saturday. One game was shown on USA Network and the rest on NBCSN, and then the over-the-air game on NBC. Appreciate your work there at World Soccer Talk. So with Peacock, it is very frustrating because they keep on changing everything. It seems to be... So week one, Paul's right, it seemed to be that they had waited 24 hours before showing any games available on demand for the games that were on NBCSN. But now it appears that they've gone back, they've changed it, but without telling anyone. It looks like for this weekend, it looks like the games will be available on demand sooner than 24 hours later. But we never know until we experience it. I mean, even from last week, too, they missed Goal Rush. I think they had totally forgotten to put it on, so there was no Goal Rush on. So, I mean, hopefully they'll fix that for this week and moving forward, especially with having all those 10 a.m. kickoff games. I think Goal Rush would do really, really well right now on Peacock, so hopefully they'll bring that back. But I don't know. With Peacock, it's just been really inconsistent and frustrating. United fan says, when will the Premier League TV rights deal be announced? I just really want a ESPN and Fox joint bid to win the rights over NBC. NBC is terrible. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to see an ESPN-Fox joint bid because ESPN spent $1.4 billion getting La Liga. Fox, for the most part, is out of club soccer. I mean, it's all focused on the World Cup and the Women's World Cup and Copa America, Gold Cup, I mean, the big tournaments. So I don't see them doing a joint bid at this time. So we will find out the winner of the Premier League TV rights for next season onwards within the next 2 to 3 months. Chris says, I am back after being gone last week due to a busy work schedule. I wanted to give a huge credit to Paramount Plus for stepping up and being the new home in the US for the Scottish Premiership. The first few weeks of the season have been entertaining, and it's great to see that the Old Firm is going to be aired on television again because it's, in my view, one of the biggest derbies in world football. My question to either of you is this. With ESPN having both La Liga and the Bundesliga for the foreseeable future, along with spending huge amounts of money on other sports, where does this leave ESPN and Major League Soccer in terms of renewing the deal beyond 2022 in your view? Kartik, do you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, I think there's some concern about MLS's ratings not going up appreciably the way ESPN wanted them to. However, I think that the package may be a little more affordable for ESPN now that they're going to be de-linked with the U.S. men's and women's national team. I do think it is possible ESPN does not retain the rights, that they just don't want to commit the amount of money that perhaps MLS is looking for in this deal. So I think that's very much up in the air. I think it's very possible that that the amount of money they've outlaid on these other properties and this college sports realignment that's going on, that will be I think the whole shakeout would have happened by the time this new window for MLS opens to negotiate, where ESPN really seems to be dismembering Disney and ESPN seem to be dismembering all the competition via college football rights and conference realignment may take them out of the MLS picture. However, I think MLS is in a very good position given the number of networks and streaming services that are interested in live soccer. And it, being the top men's domestic league in the country is going to be worth something to somebody.
Yeah, very good point, there, Kartik. To me, the big question is what incentive is there for ESPN to go ahead and renew the rights to Major League Soccer for the next rights cycle? So, I mean, previously it would have been, the big one would have been, okay, hey, in order to show U.S. men's national team games and U.S. women's national team games, we have to go ahead and buy rights to MLS. But because they will be separated, that incentive is gone now. Now you could bid on, you know, U.S. national team rights separately than Major League Soccer rights. So then again, back to the same question, what incentive is there for ESPN to acquire or to renew the rights to MLS? I don't know, Kartik. I don't know. Because, I mean, even going back to last weekend, going back to Barcelona Real Sociedad, going back to the coverage of La Liga, the promos that they had on television, they had a promo for the Bundesliga with David Hasselhoff and the great new commercial with the Hoff. And then they had a promo, and then they switched channels, and they had ESPN Deportes, and then they had a promo for Liga MX, the Mexican league, the games that they've picked up from that, from Fox. I didn't see any promos for Major League Soccer. Maybe during the commentary, they talked about coming up later, got the MLS game with Atlanta coming up, and that's, you mean, on ESPN 2, I think it was, or ESPN Plus later that same day.
Yeah, it was right after, but it was on another network.
Right, it's not, yeah, so ideally it would have been on ABC, it would have been just kind of like, hey, let's go from this one to the next one. I just wonder, Kartik, if ESPN thinks, okay, in order to get the most number of subscribers, let's focus, let's double down on foreign sports, on when it comes to soccer, foreign leagues, and that's where the growth is.
But that, the MLS, MLS Live, or MLS, I'm even forgetting what it was called.
Right, Direct Kick. All those games.
Yeah, right. So those games that go to ESPN Plus, maybe that's still... there's a lot of incentive to keep those, but that's a completely different scenario than keeping 30 or 40 matches on linear television a year, which I'm not sure that they necessarily want to do, given the numbers. I do know there are some people, this is a little bit of reporting here, at ESPN that are concerned about the MLS ratings. They don't think they're terrible. They just don't think they've gone up along the same trajectory that they should, given the amount of money, the increased amount of money that's been shelled out for rights fees for MLS. Now, again, the MLS rights fees, you could argue, have been linked with they have been linked with U.S. soccer. So maybe the U.S. soccer numbers being what they are also have an impact on that thinking. But now they're going to be delinked. So ESPN is going to have to make, I think, a hard business decision about Major League Soccer in terms of at least the linear product, that the 40 or so matches they show on linear television each season.
Yeah, those ESPN Plus games too. I mean, only ESPN would know what the viewership is for those games, those out-of-market games. In the next TV deal,
it actually drive new subscriptions. So there are going to be people who turn around and say, "Oh, if you don't show MLS, I'm going to not subscribe. I'm going to cancel my subscription." Or if you don't show USL, they have the same deal going with USL.
Yep.
I don't think MLS and USL have that huge an impact on ESPN Plus's subscriber base. I could be wrong.
I would like to think that they do, but I don't think I've ever heard a person say to me, you know, online or in person, like, "Hey, I'm going to cancel my ESPN Plus subscription because of a possibility of MLS games not being on there anymore."
Yeah.
And when you think about it too, as far as ESPN Plus, you mean, and soccer coverage, MLS would have been there on day one. MLS would have been the first games of, you mean, first soccer coverage ever on ESPN Plus. Would have been MLS games, all those out-of-market games. And in the next TV deal, those out-of-market games are going to be bundled with the national package that's going to be offered to all the different broadcasters. And I think MLS is okay. I'm not worried about MLS. And like you said, Kartik, there's a lot of other tech companies and streaming companies out there that would be interested in bidding on the rights. And so you could have an Amazon Prime coming in and say, hey, we want to get all the rights to all the games, and we will show them, you mean, in partnership with Fox, in partnership with Univision, et cetera, et cetera. But no, it's a great question, and a great question from Chris about what we think is going to happen. It's, I don't know. I think it's, especially spending $1.4 billion on La Liga, I mean, just way more than what they've spent on MLS. That's a lot of money to spend. I mean, yes, they have bucket loads of money still, but I just wonder if how that impacts their decision moving forward and whether to pay for a property that they know doesn't really grow that much as far as the viewership numbers. I mean, and again, only they would know a lot of those numbers. Jason says, as a ESPN Plus subscriber, I am disappointed that they overpaid for La Liga rights, a league which I have no interest in at all. I fear one day they won't be able to renew the Bundesliga and the championship when those contracts expire, because they will be hamstrung to the deal with La Liga. That would guarantee me dropping the subscription if that happens. Kind of a semi-miracle, by the way, that they got the Dutch Eredivisie back. And so, yeah, it's good to hear that the Dutch Eredivisie's back. I wouldn't call it a semi-miracle, but it does. Just as we were talking about before, how does the La Liga deal for ESPN Plus impact ESPN Plus's future rights acquisition? Bry says, I'm sad that Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe will be playing, and I won't be watching if it's only on beIN Sports. I watched La Liga for years on beIN Sports, but hated the streaming apps and poor technology. I just can't see subscribing to a beIN Sports carrier just to see League One matches when I have easier access to Premier League, La Liga, Champions League, EFL, MLS, etc. Not to mention all the other programming on ESPN+, Peacock, and Paramount+. Mercator says, I'm not sure Messi won't boost ratings. I had to sign up for Fanatis again after I cancelled when La Liga moved, because my parents are insistent they'd be able to watch Messi. My 8-year-old nephew wants a PSG jersey for his birthday. I thought he was a Barcelona fan. There is no one like Messi. He is the horse driving the football bandwagon. ESPN Plus La Liga coverage is quite impressive. What is the daily La Liga news show that they have? Seems like it was from La Liga TV and not an ESPN production. I've been enjoying it the last few days. Good to see Ian Joy back. They also seem to have a daily La Liga show. Overall, much more content than I've seen for any league on any broadcaster. ESPN really can do a good job when they make an effort. David Ornstein, by the way, is awesome. Does a really good job at The Athletic covering Arsenal with Amy. Him and Fab are the best in show, in my opinion. Hopefully this means more and better coverage of Arsenal. I don't think the season will be kind to us, but so glad to have the Arsenal back last week. Giovanni says, hey guys, now that Messi has left Barcelona, how will the club do this 2021-22 season in La Liga, Copa del Rey, and the UEFA Champions League? Your prediction, thank you, and God bless. Kartik, I'll take this one. As we saw against Real Sociedad, the level of competition is not going to be that difficult for the most part in La Liga. I could see, Atleti probably giving, it's the usual suspects, right? Probably Villarreal, Atleti, and Real Madrid giving Barcelona a tough time. I still question Barcelona's defense, their back line, and how porous it is. Same thing with Dortmund too. I love Dortmund going forward in the back. I'm always like, come on, Dortmund, spend some of that money in the back and tighten it up a little bit, because that's their weakness. And I think it's the same thing with Barcelona. So I see Barcelona having a very difficult time in the Champions League, but probably doing pretty well in La Liga and Copa del Rey, and going to the final two in both of those. What about you, Kartik?
Maybe. I want to see if if Sevilla sells Koundé, want to see if there's one or two other moves in and out of La Liga, because I think Sevilla have a good team. This might be the last dance for Rakitic. I think Atleti are still better than Barcelona or Real Madrid. Nice opening weekend for Barcelona, but I do think that there are limitations in that squad. So I say third, maybe fourth for them in the league.
All right. And last but not least, Anonymous, who requested she not mention her name, says, to say this past week was chaotic transfer-wise would be an understatement. In an age where most players don't stay one-club players, I thought Messi would, and alas, he will not be. I could ask so many questions about the transfer and that went and what went wrong, but the question that lingers with me is, do you think Laporta and Florentino's gamble to keep fighting for the European Super League is worth it? I see why they need to keep this fight going, but I can't fathom it materializing any time in the near future, as so many stakeholders, fans, and UEFA will use all resources to shut it down as they already have before. Now, Kartik, I know that you're never too short of opinions about the ESL, the European Super League, but what do you think about the question from Anonymous about the gamble that Laporta and Florentino made, and do you think it's still worth it?
Well, for them, it's absolutely worth it. But given how important it was, and we now know in hindsight, I think we suspected it at the time, but we now know in hindsight how badly both Barcelona and Real Madrid needed this thing, how their survival of their clubs in terms of being these top-tier clubs that were at the very top of the food chain in European football were dependent on getting this over the line. Why did they botch the launch so badly? That's the bottom line. I mean, it's they were so arrogant that they thought, and their entire clubs as we knew it depended on this launch and depended on this thing going forward. How could they have botched it up so badly? So that's the great takeaway for me now, irrespective of my own opinion, which is very much against it. How, given those two clubs in particular needed this worse than anything, did they botch it so badly that it fell apart within 72 hours? So that is why I think it's not going to happen again soon. They might try, but the powers that be being against them were partly because they botched it so badly. They made assumptions, a rash of assumptions based on who they were that were completely incorrect. So I think they blew it, honestly. It's too little too late now.
Yeah, so the three main players in this European Super League concept were what? Barcelona under Laporta, Real Madrid really kind of number one under Florentino, Juventus two, right? Was it Agnelli?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So the three of them kind of, but then at the same time though, Kartik, you have to remember, of course you remember too, but listeners, we have to remember, Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester United, etc. And that's the thing about this though too, is like what the Dirty Dozen really, right? I think they all underestimated the power of the fans. I think they all underestimated the public and thought that that the public wouldn't stand up, wouldn't fight against this, wouldn't be so vocal. That you would, Gary Neville, as the perfect example of kind of the leader of this anti-movement against this, being so vocal about this on a broadcaster that has the rights to Sky, to the Premier League, that was probably had a good chance of probably getting the rights to the European Super League. This would be a moneymaker for them. But Gary Neville and the fans kind of standing up saying, like, hell no, we don't want the ESL. And I wonder if that's part of it, where they were just out of touch with reality and didn't think that the fans would object to this. But then again, too, internally, too, there might have been a lot of yes men. Internally, they might have thought, okay, let's rush this. We need the money desperately. Don't worry about kind of in terms of this plan. Don't worry, we won't botch it. But ultimately, I don't think it's worth it. With the financial trouble that Barcelona's in, Serie A is in a lot of financial trouble too. Real Madrid's got some issues. I mean, especially with the building of the new stadium. Barcelona's building, going to be doing a major redevelopment too, or had planned to it. It's a dicey game to play. I mean, being so much in debt and leveraging so much of this money, and then at the same time seeing an opportunity to make a ton of money, but also to make it a closed league so that would guarantee them vast sums of money in the future. You were against it. I was against it. And I don't think it was worth it. I think for me, in the back of my mind, I'm still going to have a bitter taste, especially about Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Juventus. You mean I won't forget that. I will remember that for many, many years, Kartik. What about you?
Yeah, it's impossible. I mean, there's someone who told me this week that, and I was really surprised. I'm trying to remember who it was that told me that I talked to that told me now they dislike Barcelona and Real Madrid as much as they dislike Bayern. And they were always, you know, the fan who said, oh, Bayern buys everything. They buy all the best players in the world or all the best players to keep them going. They're 17 feeder teams in the Bundesliga to them. And I don't know how you watch that league because of Bayern. This person told me now they hate Real Madrid and Barcelona as much as they hate Bayern because they were part of that Super League and they were the ringleaders and Bayern stayed out of it. So, I don't think that's an isolated opinion. And and Juventus also, this person didn't mention Juve to me, but I think Juve also has taken a major hit from this. Now, in terms of within England, I don't know how long the residual damage to those six clubs will be, but it was there's still a lot of anger towards them now. I'm wondering if there's a really good title race this season. Things calm down, right? COVID runs its course, although based on what's happening here in Florida, we're at the peak of the pandemic right now, worse than it's been. Maybe that happens in the UK also, but let's say that doesn't happen. I wonder if there's a feel-good season and people just forget about the dirty dozen or the dirty half dozen in terms of England and they just move on. I think it's possible. It just really depends how this season goes.
Yeah, I think they'll forget about it. I mean, based on the way – I mean – everything that we've been through the last 18 months, and it's an escape. I mean, watching these games and getting back into it, and it's enjoyable. It's good to see you have your teams that you support. It is an escape from reality in many ways. But that having said that, though, to Kartik about kind of still having a little bit of a bitter taste for the Barcelona's, Juventus, and Real Madrid, especially those three. The same can be said, too. I mean, my lasting memory of NBC's coverage of last season, well, there's two, but the number one would have been how soft they were on the news about the European Super League and all the news. It was a developing story. But that day, on that Sunday, where they seemed to be like, yeah, this doesn't really make sense. I don't think I'm really for it. But, yeah, it's just really, really passive critique of what was happening, what was unfolding, what was going to rip up the game, really. That to me is my lasting memory of NBC's coverage of last season. Yes, they did fantastic work on other things, and it's been a long season, and it's one day. The next day when they came back on the Monday, it was a different tune completely, and I think they sensed how upset everybody was about this and had time to think through their thoughts. But that's for me. That's my lasting memory.
For me, I mean, I don't think they did well with that. But for me, it's the way they handled the Man United fan protests, which of course were related to the Super League. But the way that was handled by NBC was unforgivable.
Yeah.
And in Rebecca Lowe's case, she doubled down the next day in an even more kind of defensive posture of the Glazers. So, yeah.
And maybe with David Ornstein there now too, that person can be that type of figure who could really understand what's going on and really convey.
Yeah, look, I mean, I Neil Ashton, who had been in that role for NBC and had done well in that role, is the PR person representing the Glazers and Ed Woodward when this thing happens.
Right.
So I that's not lost on me. That might hit really kind of skewed NBC's coverage the way it did. Or maybe it was the other people told me, oh, it's because the Glazers are NFL owners and NBC's very invested in the NFL here stateside. That's possible also. It's probably maybe a combination of both. But, yeah, so having David Ornstein, who's still a journalist and is still writing, That might help kind of balance that out. That's a very good point, because a lot of our listeners may not know what happened to Neil Ashton. He is actually now he's got his own PR shop, but his big client is Ed Woodward and Manchester United. That's his overriding job now, is to be a publicist for them.
Propaganda, right? Exactly.
Propaganda, yeah.
Yeah, right, totally. All right, listeners, we want you to have your say. We've covered a lot of ground in this episode, and you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com under the podcast thread, and we'd love to read those out on a future episode. So on behalf of Kartik and I and the World Soccer Talk crew, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week. And Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.
Capital One wants to change the world of credit one small good thing at a time. So here's one good thing about to happen to Steve, who's very late for work and has left his credit card at home. Or did he? Maybe it's stolen. Maybe someone will hand it in. Maybe not. Maybe you should cancel it right now, Steve. Better safe than sorry. Capital One lets you lock your card with one tap, and you can unlock it again if it turns out to be right where you left it. Capital One, that's one good thing.